What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
Oi, the boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature, so keep the volume down if there are kiddies around, and thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mitts and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started. It's the
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to FP Presents CF Montreal 3 Questions. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
Okay, this is CF Montreal 3 Questions, week 18, Ollie.
Getting
there. We're past the halfway point. CF Montreal kind of chugging along here, where they had some positive results prior to the international break, and then come up against the juggernaut, that's Chicho Arango and Real Salt Lake, and have a pretty positive performance. But before we get into that, how are you doing?
Doing very well, but I'm curious to know, have you had any feedback about how things are going for CF Montreal since that game? Because I'm surprised everybody seems to have a gloomy kind of, it's really tough, it's not going well. I don't know if it's the start of the season that was so unexpectedly positive. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the month of May with the results, but especially Olivier Renard leaving, transfer request from Chouinard, then eventually Vasily Kremenzidis leaving, but this team is like unbeaten in four. They have two clean sheets. They beat DC 4-2. They just held the second best attack in the league behind Inter Miami, best team in the West. And there is that kind of lingering, it's complicated at the moment. How do you explain that?
Yeah, the gloom and doom.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how you explain it. I think it's because it falls into the tired old narrative that usually surrounds the club, you know, save for 2022. So it's easy, it's lazy. So like, if you've not done your homework, then just like, CF Montreal up to the same shenanigans again.
Well, you know what? That's really interesting, because you're talking about the homework. The feedback I've been getting, like, I'm talking about some colleagues, but neighbors, people on the street, you know, talking about it. And it's not their job to do their homework. Right. It's just their job to consume whatever comes at you. And I'm curious as to what the club can do now, looking into the summer transfer window, the lead up, because the atmosphere at the stadium is good. The results are decent. The show, I think, even though it was nil all at the weekend, you get decent football when you go, way better than what you had in 2017 and 2018. Yet you have that lingering kind of, did a wheel fall off? Is it back on? Did we go through the mechanic and we're kind of back on the road here? People don't really know. And I think that'll be a club job. And I'm not just talking about Laurent Courtois, but a club job to kind of reset the narrative and say, listen, we've got injured players that are coming back. We've got guys who are with the national team and we're still keeping the best attack and the best team in the West in check. I think you need to do a very intentional job in terms of communicating to your normal Joe or Josephine, whatever you want to call them, on the street on St. Catherine in Montreal, to kind of make sure that you tell people, hey, it's not a catastrophe at the moment.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And shout out to James Sharman's daughter, Josephine. So you could have been talking directly to her. So maybe Joe can do her homework on CF Montreal and the goings on with the club. But I wonder about the timing of it, you know, that we're coming into La Saint-Jean. So like the big party here in Quebec. But also, you know, Chouinard, Piette go off to the national team. Waterman late addition to that Copa America roster. Do you think that the good that's come out of this camp and this club has been shrouded in a way by the Euros and also by the lead up to Copa America and Canada facing Argentina? I mean, even though there are two nominees from the club that the club should be broadcasting, that should be out there, they should be trumpeting that like big banners around the city to say that, listen, there's a certain pride in these players representing our club, but no, you don't hear a whole lot about it.
That's a really good point. But yeah, you have to push that message, right? Mm-hmm. You have to say that you're really, really proud that Samuel Piet and Mathieu Chouanière and now Joel Waterman were called up by a guy who's just coming in, who could have shifted the whole thing and said, you know what, those players don't interest me. They're Herdman or they're Biello players. So I think that needs to be celebrated with a positive result on top, which is what I think adds to what you managed to do against Real Salt Lake. That's honestly, it's a fantastic team. It's that typical, I think, benchmark team to judge MLS over the last 2 or 3 years. Last year, they were really interesting, and you could just feel, because it's a small market. I find it's a market that Montreal could very much try to copy. They had new owners come in, when was it, 2 or 3 years ago? Mm-hmm. They took their time, they built, they want to have an academy feeding their club, but they're also willing to go fork out some money to get the Chicho Arangos of this world. So I think it's a really positive result, and you need to put those two things forward. But I think what really explains this feeling of, well, you know, it's not going really well for CF Montreal, I think you're still punch drunk from everything that happened in May. The feeling that you have one of your best players, your MVP, the only guy to go to the All-Star game last year, asking for a transfer. You have the sporting director a few weeks later, who's been a huge part of that club's success since the end of 2019, who leaves. His assistant leaves as well. You're not quite sure, and it doesn't mean nobody's able to do it, but you don't know for a fact who's actually driving the thing and who will be in charge of driving it for the next transfer window. So if I'm a fan, I'm a bit worried about that. And I think that's what explains, more than what's happening on the actual football pitch, that's what explains the feeling people have at the moment.
I like the comparison you made there, where CF Montreal could almost be modeling themselves after RSL. And I was going to get into this later, but actually before I do, I wanted to ask you, because we do something called the Looky Likey on the main podcast,
yeah,
right? Where you've got two people who different walks of life, but have a resemblance. And I thought Diego Luna, yeah, for Real Salt Lake looked like a very disheveled, been through the ringer, Matias Kokoro. Could you see that?
through the ringer or in the dryer?
Because in both.
It's quite a bit. They're both very feisty, and they've got that kind of put them on the pitch and something will happen. You don't know if it'll be a good thing or a bad thing. Yeah, okay. We can try and get in touch with Matias and get him to bleach his hair and add a few tattoos around his neck, and we'll see what happens.
I think if you did, you'd have a very compelling looky-likey. But well, yep. Anyway, leaving that aside, I'm gonna put a mock-up together, Ollie, and I'll put it out on socials, and we'll see what the people have to say about it. But Andrew Wiebe, so to my earlier point about your point with comparing CF Montreal and using Real Salt Lake almost as a blueprint, Andrew Wiebe had an interesting tweet. And so he was thinking about CF Montreal, and this is a quote: "If they want to be the develop and sell team, all good. But you have to go out and get guys to develop and sell. Got to trade for Georgie and the Johnstons. Got to find and sign Ala Ishmael Kone." And he said, let's take two examples currently in the Canadian national team for Copa. If you're a club like Montreal, you have to find a way to get Moise Bambito into your club. He's from Montreal. He was in the same youth club as Kone, and Rapids traded up to draft him. So I thought that really dovetails nicely with what you're saying. And it speaks to the looming issue at the club with this summer transfer window, like coming up really quick. Gabriel Gerva at the helm now of Sporting, is really important who they bring in to sort of not right the ship, but to make sure that that vision is very much that, and that they stay within the confines of that, don't you think, in order to maintain the relevancy in the small market, as you said, of MLS?
I think that's really interesting. Having said that, I don't know who represents Moise Bambito, but if you're his agent, his mother, his father, or just the player himself, do you not want to wait and see what happens with Mathieu Chouanière before you make that move and become the local guy who comes back home?
from the player's perspective, 100%, of course.
And I think that's why that's a huge chunk I can't for the life of me understand. Unless when Olivier Renard left, Mathieu Choignard started asking for a trade even more intently, or double what he was reportedly asking for, which was 600,000. I don't think that was crazy money at all. I presume that means you could have gotten, you could sign him for 5 or 550. I'm going back to the moment those requests were made. Because the feeling that gives to people, and we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, and we don't know who's asking for what and who's telling, I don't want to say the truth because everybody has their own truths in those negotiations, but the feeling you get is that the club was looking to get him at a hometown discount or didn't want to give him what I'm pretty sure the rest of the league will give him eventually if he leaves. That would be worrying for me if I'm Moise Bombito, because it doesn't feel like a stepping stone or an opportunity to become a big star in your market. It's more a, well, come here, we'll give you an opportunity that you already have in Colorado, and Colorado's on the upswing. They were a disaster last year and they're doing quite well now this year, especially with Georgi Mihailovic coming back and Chris Armas taking over, which is a fascinating character to speak to, by the way. Like, he's so interesting. I did know him from Adam, and I did a Colorado and Vancouver match a few weeks ago. So insightful in his way of building things and explaining to the media what he's trying to do with his team. So if I'm Bombito, what's making it worth my while to come back? Obviously, it can be worth Colorado's while to make a trade that's interesting to them. But I think before you start looking down that avenue, you have to sort out the Mathieu Choignard situation.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how all that happens. But to link it back to the CF Montreal crew and the positivity of late, 4 games unbeaten, and they did the last one, or the last performance without Piet and Choignard in the middle of the park. And then we alluded to the fact that Waterman is now off to join Canada to face Argentina in their first match of Copa America on Thursday. So how much of that is a blow? Yes, it's celebrated. You're proud that you've got three players from your club who are represented on the national team. But I mean, those are three massive holes that you have to fill now from CF Montreal's perspective.
Two of them you knew, you always knew you were going to have to fill. Joel Waterman, you maybe got used to the idea that you'd have him at the back. Before he was pushed up into midfield at the end of that game against RSL, and before he looked very comfortable being pushed up into midfield, I would have said it's a big, big blow. Now it's a massive blow, because you can see that he was a part of Laurent Courtois' reasoning to see how he can tweak things tactically. And I think that's another important aspect, because a lot of people were saying, you know what, I can't wait for all these injured strikers to come back, because now we'll see what Laurent Courtois has in his back pocket in terms of tactics and flexibility. And that was a good example, pushing Joel Waterman up, bringing on a ton of strikers. Lassie Lapalainen was there. Kokoro, Mason Toy came in. Who else? I'm missing one. Opoku came on as well. That looked like what Wilfried Nancy used to do in 2022 when he was going after a match, especially at home. And this was going after a match against a very good attacking team, yet making sure you were padded at the back because you brought on Corbo to push Joel Waterman upstream a bit. I thought that was so interesting. And now you finish that game, you go, okay, maybe we found somewhat of a solution for the rest of the month of June. And then you get Jesse Marsh on the on the phone saying, yeah, by the way, we've got a striker that's now unavailable. Junior Hoylett is pulling out, so we'll get your central defender.
We'll take the keystone piece to your back line, please.
You know, Laurent Courtois must have been saying, you've got to be kidding me right now. But you know what? If you want to be a developing club, you want to have decent player, and you've got a minimum of ambition, you have to be able to live with that. But especially with him moving up into midfield, I think that's a huge, huge blow for Laurent Courtois.
And after a really difficult month of May, which we already spoke about, but that Jesse Marsh even referenced when he first put together his roster for those two friendlies against the Dutch and the French, when Sirwa and Waterman were excluded. He was asked about it, and he said, you know, Sirwa not in his best form, conceded a lot, the team's been struggling, and Waterman the same thing. He wanted to see him be more physical, have more of a physical presence as part of that back line and show a little bit more fight. And I think that Joel Waterman, whether that wasn't a calling out of sorts, but he must have gotten wind of it. He's probably had a conversation with Jesse Marsh. I think the response to that criticism, constructive, it should be mentioned, but was quite good. And that was as complete a performance as I've seen from Waterman in a while, in a position that, of course, he's familiar with. He grew up playing in the middle of the park, but he just went in there with such swagger. And any threat that CF Montreal, and you mentioned the litany of strikers that have been on the injury list, and Apoku and Toy notably were freed up in behind from service from Joel Waterman in a deeper lying position in the middle of that midfield. So really encouraging. But as you say, like you're Courtois and you're thinking, okay, this is the solution now to these two, you know, massive pillars in the middle of the park that have kind of driven the play for much of the season. I have somebody who can fill in, and now he's gone as well. So you had an interesting interview this week with Alessandro Biello.
Yep.
Mauro Biello's son, who signs pro, has come up through the ranks with CF Montreal in their academy. And he mentioned Nathan Saliba, another standout performance, I thought, for Montreal at the weekend. Yeah, using him kind of as somebody that he sees as a role model, and he wants to kind of pattern his game off of in the way that he conducts himself on the pitch, but also off the pitch. Is Biello, do you think, even though we've got Wanyama, who I think deployed less successfully in the middle of the park, you have Arita Zuhir, is Biello more a type of guy, even though he's very green, has seen very little minutes, and the minutes he has seen have been kind of in a wingback position? Is he perhaps the answer for Courtois to fill that gap?
Beside who?
Maybe Nathan Saliba.
Well, that's the part that worries me a bit, because on paper, if you're looking down the road, my answer is 100%. Nathan Saliba, however, is this good because last year you were patient with him at the beginning of the season. He wasn't great, but he was beside a Samuel Piet. He was beside a Victor Wanyama. Same thing for Ismaël Koné. Koné was outstanding, but he had pillars, experienced guys beside him. And that, I don't want to say allows them to make mistakes, but gives them the comfort of not being the person responsible for everything in midfield. So that's the only bit that's kind of worrying me. Having said that, looking at Bryce Duke's performance, Yankov still needs a bit of time. I'm wondering, until Mathieu Chouanière and Samuel Piet come back, are you not better off just having three proper midfielders and two strikers, and just try and make the midfield as dense as possible? Give Victor Wanyama less room to ground to cover, because I think it's going to take ages for him to get to a point where he can do that for 90 minutes if it's two guys in the middle rather than three. And I'm sorry, but Bryce Duke just loses way too many balls. Like, I think he was beaten in seven duels. He only won two. I understand that's not his bread and butter, but you have to keep the ball a lot more. You have to win the ball a lot more than that if you want to be trusted to be one of two attacking midfielders. So maybe that could be a solution. If you're telling me you find a way to put Wanyama, Saliba and Biello, and maybe free up Saliba a tiny bit more to get forward, because there was a few glimpses of that against Real Salt Lake, and I thought that was quite interesting, then I'd say yes. If you're telling me that Biello is beside Victor Wanyama, I'd be more inclined to say yes as well. Saliba and Biello, unless you're 100% comfortable with things going wrong, but you know that that's going to pay off so much more than giving Wanyama more minutes in the long run, because you know that Wanyama at the very latest at the end of the year is gone. Well, then as a club decision, I'm absolutely okay with that.
Yeah. Talking about that insulation around a player who's youthful, as that lack of experience does so much for a player in the moment when you're managing the game, but also the mental game. But then when you talk about Joel Waterman, then also picked up and plucked out of that structure, you lose the insulation that you get and the leadership as part of that back line. And I think Gabriel Okorbo can step in, and he'll do so admirably. He'll do so competently. He won't give you exactly the same look as a Joel Waterman. But I want to go back to what you were saying. So does that mean then, in that structure, like if you're Laurent Courtois, you put in three midfielders in there. Does that mean you're putting Yankov and Duke on the bench?
So unless you keep Yankov behind Kokoro, I wouldn't be against that. Or maybe if you want to stay with the two guys in the middle, I definitely straight away put Opoku beside Yankov rather than Duke beside Yankov. And then whoever is up top, be that Sanusi Ibrahim because he's got the legs, be that Kokoro for 45 minutes. And you know that you can take him off at halftime because just the guy just comes on. I'm speaking of Kokoro. He comes on and you just feel he's going to set the place alight. And is it very refined tactically? No, but do you feel he can just make something happen at any moment? Absolutely. So I definitely think in those terms. And if not, yeah, I wouldn't be against, because you don't create enough chances anyway with Yankov and Duke at the moment. And this is a very Copa America type thought process that I have, because when you go beyond that, I think Yankov at the very least has to be on the pitch, and then you find a way to make it work. But if you have to go with two strikers and have three midfielders, I wouldn't have an issue with that.
Yeah, we'll see how they set up, but their next opponents are going to be difficult at Stade Saputo, because they're going to be facing New York Red Bulls, a team that's doing very well this season, but they play and you know they're well known for their high press, very, very aggressive.
Yep.
How do you think this back line and the building out of the back, which we know Courtois likes to do, which we know Sirwa has kind of grown into? There have been some growing pains, notably. But do you think that this team is able to build out of the back successfully against a really aggressive Red Bull team?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know how you saw it against Real Salt Lake, but I felt they were picking their moments a bit more. Under Nancy, you had the feeling that they systematically wanted to build from the back. Mm-hmm. I get the feeling that now they want to kind of mix it up so that when they do build from the back, it's a bit of a surprise for the other team and they have a decision to make. And that's where the opposition is maybe not as organized or structured in their pressing. And that's where it can actually pay off for you. And, because I felt that Sirwa cleared a few balls faster in that game than he certainly did against Toronto in that match, where was it the second or third goal they gave away, trying to build from the back. So I don't think you can systematically do it against the Red Bulls, because you'll get done. You'll get done at least once because they're too good at their pressing. Having said that, I find it's a great benchmark to see where Laurent Courtois' head is at in terms of being confident that his team can not do it in the long run, but execute for game number, 18 against the Red Bulls this week. Because that's something that came up a few times since Courtois took over in January. What he wants to do on paper and where his team is in that process. And sometimes you get the feeling that he says, okay, hit the brake pedal a tiny bit. This is for 2 or 3 weeks from now because we're not there yet. So we're going to pick and choose our moments. We won't be all in trying to do it every single time. So I think it's going to be a mix of trying to bring the Red Bulls in, invite their pressing and go in behind. And at other times, if you feel that it's heating up a bit too much in your defensive third, well, that's where you play forward. But if it does work against the Red Bulls, then you're in. Because they're really committed. They'll go with 4, 5, maybe 6 players really trying to get you in the ropes. But if you get beyond that first line of real hard press, then you're basically scot-free to go on the counter.
Should be interesting to see, as you mentioned, Courtois and then the team picking their spots, if they're a little bit more aggressive in their buildup and willing to try things because they are at home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a comfort in that.
Yeah, there is. I think the interesting thing for those two teams is that they've got a DNA, like, again, this is on paper, that they bring on the road or keep with them at home and away. And I think that's what makes it interesting. I think I'd have the same conversation with you if Montreal were playing in New York at Red Bull Arena, because I think they're trying to keep a pretty 50-50 approach to being on the road or being at home, which was completely the opposite last year under Hernan Losada. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see.
And I think that, you know, you get Corbo if he starts in the heart of that defense and say you have Soso still playing that wing back position on the left Alvarez, who was outstanding, I thought, in neutralizing Chicho Arango at the weekend. And then you have Campbell and Ruan, and then on the right hand side.
But Campbell's going to be suspended for that one because he got accumulation of yellow cards. So that's a bit of a concern now because you're shifting a good few things around. So do you bring Lapalainen on the left? Do you bring Sosa back to your back three? Does a guy like Jabang, if he's available, slot in? I don't know where he's at physically.
Physically, yep.
So that's a bit of a concern for Courtois, definitely.
Yeah, and a lot of question marks there. So I think that almost decides it for you that maybe you're a little bit more pragmatic with, mm-hmm. with the way that you build out, and that you maybe elect to go a little bit long sometimes and hope that Sunusi Ibrahim, who to me has really rounded out his game, linking up a lot better, holding the ball up, is less that agent of chaos and is somebody who can really lead the line very successfully. So that will be key in how that ball is managed, if they're able to kind of clear their lines, as it were, and just play it up. But was there anything else that you wanted to get to, Ollie, before we wrap it up today?
No, I think it's just an interesting kind of, it's where tactically and in terms of depth, it's going to be interesting to see where you're in that process we were speaking of. Because one thing that's been really hard, and I'm speaking on a personal level, quite frustrating over the last 2 months. Well, basically since Matias Cocoro and Joseph Martinez got injured within a few days of each other, mid-April it was. You don't know where the guys are. Like, are they coming back? On Friday morning, we were told before the game against Real Salt Lake, everybody's available and Martinez isn't. So that makes it hard to kind of project. Do you go all in against the Red Bulls because you're at home? Do you pull on that elastic with a start for Cocoro, for example, and you say, you know what, we'll just take the window at halftime to get a freebie to take him off and we'll have four subs left for the second half? That could absolutely be an option, considering then you're heading off a few days later to Colorado, which is going to be a hard trip because it's a decent team and you're going that far on the road. It's so hard to understand who's where in their fitness levels, and we still don't know because those guys got injured so early in the season. You don't know what your perfect 11 is in Laurent Courtois' mind, even if you had everybody fit. We're still wondering, is it two attacking midfielders? Is it two strikers? Do you play Ariel Lassiter up top? Do you play him out wide? There are so many question marks still unanswered that I suppose it makes the next few weeks a bit complicated to navigate with your absentees with the national teams. But it also makes it very interesting to see what Courtois is going to do with it.
And to put a bow on it, and what we talked about off the top was the confusing narrative around this team that it remains doom and gloom, mm-hmm. even though Courtois has been able to, and you know, the missing players away to Copa America, Lassiter away on national team duty as well. Like those are four penciled in starters, and then added to the decimated roster due to injury, that you're still able to pull some results. So really the atmosphere around this team and the narrative and the stories being written, it should be overwhelmingly positive. And yet it's puzzling that it's not.
Yeah, but that then we're taking a step back, and I won't go too deep into that because I could go on forever, but that becomes a club job as well. The issue in the past, in these kind of moments, for a mid-season kind of assessment of the team, the results, where things are going, you always had Olivier Renard, the sporting director, who would come out, and he was incredibly good at putting his spin on things, either giving you hope or giving you perspective on what happened over the first half of the season. Now that person just doesn't exist because it's Gabriel Gervais, the sporting director, by interim, whose president is his main job, let's call mm-hmm. it that. From what I've heard for the moment, he's not giving interviews. It's hard to speak with anybody from the scouting department. So you're trying to get answers and you're trying to see what's coming around the corner for that team, considering that you're doing okay with everything that's happened so far this season. But you kind of need somebody to take the mic in that club. And that's not just Laurent Courtois, because I feel we're asking way too much of him as a spokesperson on top of being a young coach that's still covering his team, his surrounding, his new club, and his job as a manager. So I think there's a bit of thinking to be done there in terms of CF Montreal's communication to say, hey, Leagues Cup is coming up. Yes, we've got players at Copa America, but let's just try and line up what's actually happening with that club, which is not all doom and gloom at the moment.
And for anybody who wants to go a little bit deeper on Alessandro Biello, get to know him a little bit better, Ollie has a great interview with him, really candid, on FC 99. So check that out. You can find it, I think, on bpmsports.ca. Is that correct, Ollie? Okay. All right. So like, subscribe. We are Footy Prime for all of the podcasts and other MLS-specific pods like TFC 3 Questions and Whitecaps 3 Questions and all of our foundational ones. So thanks, everybody. Cheers for listening.
Have a nice one.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by Fubo TV. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at @Footy_Prime and on Instagram at @FootyPrimeIG. And visit wearefootyprime.com and sign up for our newsletter. What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show. Oh.